We're delighted to be with former Ambassador Martin Indyk, who represented the United States in Israel for a number of years in the Clinton administration, as he also worked in the State Department per se, both as ambassador and as an undersecretary of state. Bill Russell, I think I interrupted you.
There's
a section in there on Iran that I found particularly interesting. And I think it was in the context of the Iranians stepping back and looking at the Clinton policy and figuring out how they were going to deal with the Clinton policy. I think part of the mistake we make is we assume that we're smarter than everybody else and they're going to behave according to plan. But at that period, given the circumstances, we're looking at the divisions between Europe and the United States. And at the problems that peace with any of the other players in there would present for them. Well, if either of those, seeing that and understanding that and knowing that the American publicly were saying this is our focus, being relatively clever people, they sat back and figured out how to counter that.
Right.
They're very clever people. All of these are very clever people, and we treat them as if they are just pawns rather than kings and queens and bishops and knights.
Yeah, it's not just that they're clever, but they've had a lot of experience dealing with outside powers. The Middle East is geostrategically located so that it's always been a territory contested by superpowers or great powers throughout history. And so they have it in their genes. They know how to deal with us, how to divert us, how to resist us, or how to turn our power to their purpose. And the Iranians, because they too live in a strategic environment, you know, they've got Pakistan and Afghanistan on one border, they've got Iraq on the other, the Russians up to the north, and then there's the United States and Europe. So, I mean, they're looking out at the world and they're figuring out how they're going to survive. And exactly as you said, we announce, and this was, you know, my strategic genius, you know, we were going to make comprehensive peace between the Israelis and the Arabs. That was our first objective. And our second objective in parallel was we were going to isolate Iran and isolate Syria. We called it, isolate Iraq. We called it the dual containment strategy. It was a strategy with two branches. Contain the Iraqi rogue Saddam Hussein and the Iranian revolutionary mullahs, and make peace between Israel and the Arabs. And the Iranians looked at this and said, okay, if he's trying to make peace and isolate us, the best way to stop them from succeeding isolating us is to stop them from making peace. And they used their proxies, particularly Hezbollah at that time and Palestine Islamic Jihad, to disrupt the whole peace process. Now, I believe, and I recount this story in the book, that they were responsible more than anybody else for the defeat of Shimon Peres after Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated and the rise of Bibi Netanyahu. I think it worked much more successfully than they imagined, but they used Hezbollah rocket fire into Israel to provoke an Israeli attack, which then cost him the Arab vote, and that was the end of him. And the end of the peace process for that time. What the lesson from this is, I think, exactly what Obama seems to be starting to do, which is, yes, to seek comprehensive peace, to try to draw the Syrians into the peace process, but to understand that that is deeply threatening to the Iranians, and not to say to the Iranians, we're going to isolate you, but to say exactly what he said, if you unclench your fist, we'll meet you with an open hand. So to tell the Iranians, we're not trying to isolate you, we're willing to have you be a partner in this effort to construct a more peaceful order in the Middle East, but it's your choice. If you want to continue on the way of Ahmadinejad, then you have chosen to isolate yourself. It's not us that's isolating. And I think that's a critically important approach.
It seems that there are two senses in which trust matters in this. There's the trust that if you say you'll do something, you'll do it. Mm. And that that there is a mutuality, that we're operating on the same value scale. There's also, I think, a trust that is, in this context, much more important, which is what you would like to have from your intelligence agencies. It's part of understanding these narratives. Mm. Not, it's not that I have trust you to do what you say you will do. It is I know enough about you to be able to understand where you are likely to go, that your behavior is not absolutely predictable, but it is... we can, within plus or minus 10 degrees, as an example, in this domain, be pretty confident that this is the behavior. And it seems to me that's the kind of trust that we need to be developing, which is largely an exercise. Again, this goes back to understanding the narratives and having good intelligence.
Yes, but here's the challenge with the Iranians. We haven't been talking to them for 30 years on any official level, and
much less listening.
We don't have a feel for them. They don't have a feel for us either, by the way.
Isn't there a lesson in that?
Well, it's interesting. Nick Burns, who was the Undersecretary for Policy and responsible for Iran in the Bush administration, did was to understand that we didn't have a feel for that. And he took what we had in my time. We had one person working on Iran, and he built that Iran desk into, I think there are now 28 people working on it. And we have, in embassies in key areas around the Middle East, diplomats who are responsible for reporting on Iran, talking to Iranians who come out of Iran, and so on. Hopefully we'll set up an interest section there. The Iranians have an interest section in Washington already, so that we can start to get that feel for them. But you're right. Listening is critically important because you then pick up the nuances. You build trust because if people feel that you're listening to them. But you also hear what they're saying. If you start to listen to what their problem is, this was a true lesson for me in negotiations. And it was actually when I was dealing with the Israelis, was to sit down and try to draw them out, try to get them to explain what their problem was with what we were trying to get them to do. Because then you can try to be creative in finding ways to answer their problems. But if you're not talking to them, you can't possibly hear that. And so that's why engaging with the Iranians becomes so important. Sit down with them and try to understand where they're coming from. Because obviously we're not going to give up our interests. We cannot accept a nuclear Iran without terrible consequences for the whole region. So we have to understand this. Why do they want nuclear weapons? What is it that's driving them? What is the insecurity there? And can we find a way to treat that insecurity so that they don't need nuclear weapons?
Former Ambassador, United States Ambassador to Israel, Martin Indyk. We'll all three be back in a moment for a couple more minutes. Be with us.